Welcome to the Inside Spanish Football Podcast. I'm Ben Crump, and joining me to look at all the action over the last week are Heath Chesters, Trey Atkinson, and Adam Brown. How are you all doing?
Doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you.
Super.
Not too bad, thanks.
Good.
Feeling good this week.
Yeah, I bet you are. Well, it's certainly been a week of joy and pain, success and failure as the Copa del Rey reached its conclusion. Whilst in La Liga, there was still very much to play for, with teams battling to avoid the relegation zone or to keep themselves amongst the European places. We'll start with the final of the Copa del Rey, which took place on Friday night at the Santiago Bernabeu, with a much-anticipated Madrid derby involving Atleti and Real. A very tense game saw Cristiano Ronaldo give Real Madrid the lead, but 10 minutes before half-time, Brazilian Diego Costa levelled the scoring for Atletico. The temperature began to rise then in the second half and tempers began to fray. Mourinho sent from the dugout and referee Clos Gomes had his work cut out and his hands full handing out bookings. The game headed into extra time and Brazilian defender Miranda, an unlikely goal scorer, popped up to score the winner in the 8th minute of the added 30. More bookings came and eventually Cristiano Ronaldo was sent off before Gabby was dismissed just before the final whistle. Trey, bringing you in to start on this one. Very tense and bad-tempered game, but Atleti got there in the end. What did you make of it all?
Well, it's very interesting where to begin with this. I mean, from the very start, Real Madrid was just in complete control. The header by Ronaldo to open up just gave the game this aura of it was going to be all Madrid all over again. Since 1999, Atletico had not won a derby, and it didn't look like it was going to happen tonight either. But luck was definitely against Real Madrid at the Santiago Bernabeu. I think it was 3 shots hit the post, defenders making goal line stands. Nothing went Real Madrid's way, and kind of the epitome of the night was Diego Costa's goal. Radamel Falcao broke past 3 defenders in an amazing way. Looked like Lionel Messi-esque, but passed it off to Costa, who brilliantly finished. And it had me thinking, well, this might not be over yet. Atletico, they're going to fight. And in the end, they were able to pull it out. But the extra time that the heated words between the players, the aggression was definitely how the game looked as it was going to end, even from very early on. Cristiano Ronaldo's red card, I believe, was very well deserved. I was deliberate when his foot went right at Gabby. He was going to see at least the second yellow, but I think a straight red was indicative of what was going on as well. And then Gabby later on deserved to be sent off. He flopped so many times. It was quite embarrassing, really. But all in all, I think that Atletico earned it with their with their play. They put their entire lineup on the field, on the pitch, and they went for it. I think that's what got it for them. But if you're looking at just overall play, Real Madrid was the better side, but I guess that heart just wasn't there for them because Atletico wanted it more, and that showed up very well. And it was a heartbreak for Real Madrid, and they won no major trophies this season. Mourinho got sent off, Ronaldo got sent off. It's kind of the poetic ending of their season, if you will.
Fantastic. Heath, bringing you in, we know over the course of the season you've had a bit of a thing for refereeing decisions, particularly the referee in this one, Clos Gomes. What did you make of the bookings and the dismissals that Trey just talked about?
Well, I mean, I think it was always going to be, shall we say, a lively game. It's a derby match, so you know, there may be always a few juicy tackles, a few tempers flaring here and there. But as soon as they announced Clos Gomes to be the referee for the final of the Copa del Rey, a Spanish showpiece game, I sort of cringed. There was 13 yellow cards, 2 red cards, and Mourinho dismissed from the touchline. And that, it's like a normal week for Clos Gomes.
It's a pretty big bonus for him, isn't it?
How, Yeah, exactly. How many were deserved? It's hard to say, but I think perhaps another referee might have been a little bit more cautious with the bookings, perhaps let the game flow a little bit better. He wasn't the best of choices for the Copa del Rey final. And to be honest, sometimes when I see some of his performances this season, and it's not just me sort of criticising, you look throughout the Spanish media, the way they give some of the referees match ratings, you very rarely see him get rated more than 3 or 4 out of 10. So how he's still on the list of top flight referees, I don't know. Getting the Copa del Rey final seems to be the sort of pat on the back for him. He's one referee that personally I'd like to see sort of struck from the list, demoted to another level, and give somebody else a chance, to be honest.
What did you make of Cristiano Ronaldo sending off? Do you think that it was justified, or?
I think there was some petulance on his part. Again, I think it's heat of the moment. Another referee might have had a word. And to be honest, it's like I've seen from Klos Gomez before. There were absolutely no bookings in the first half. Then, as soon as he produced his first one, I think it was Sami Khedira. Turon got booked in the first half, but Sami Khedira was the first. Quantrao, then Khedira. And then they just seemed to come in, the bookings. I think he could have had a word with players more than just flashing the cards. I know they're trying to stamp their authority on the game, perhaps, but I think sometimes he takes it a bit too far. He could have a word. Instead, he books players straight away. So I think, and certainly in a game like that, it's a final, it's a derby, a bit more common sense, I think.
Superb. Well, following on from the Copa del Rey final, and just before we take a look at the rest of the weekend's action in La Liga, on Monday night, Real Madrid president Florentino Perez called a press conference to make the announcement that everyone was expecting. Jose Mourinho will be leaving the club at the end of the season. Heath, sticking with you, whilst it's no surprise, really, reports going back all the way, sort of last year, what do you make of the way that Real Madrid have handled things?
Not in the best way possible, I don't think. When you look at how much the press are behind, and then they've sort of swung full circle to being praising of Mourinho for winning the title and doing well and improving the team, to turning around and slating him at every possible opportunity. I think perhaps Real Madrid are guilty of perhaps not handling things as well. I mean, a couple of months ago there was the thing where they pulled one of the directors, the communications manager, and Mourinho pulled a reporter into a side office to have a word, to try and sort of contain a story. I think perhaps he could have got a bit more backing, but then, as we've said before, he put himself in this firing line for wanting total control. So I think to a certain extent the club said, well, you want total control, there you are, you're the face of your total control, and pretty much left him to it. Obviously we've had the thing with him not appearing at press conferences, which La Liga weren't happy about. He was leaving that to Carranca, although sometimes I think that was perhaps the best thing to do. Although to be fair to Mourinho, when the team were getting beat, he did show his face in the post-match press conferences and was prepared to take the flak. I think Mourinho perhaps could have handled things a little bit better himself, although you can understand him sort of losing his patience with the press, the way they were dealing with things. And I think Real Madrid perhaps could have backed him up a little bit more. Hopefully, whoever gets the job next, they give him a little bit more backing. Although I certainly don't think the next manager is going to have as much total control, in inverted commas, as Mourinho has had.
Superb. Adam, bringing you in, we haven't forgotten about you.
Thank you.
Jose Mourinho, 3 trophies in 3 years with Real Madrid. Do you think his time there has been a success, or overall a failure?
I mean, you can't deny that he's made a certain amount of progress from where they were before. You know, he's, as he said in that press conference, you know, he's made the three Champions League semi-finals in 3 years, which they obviously weren't doing before. But three trophies, one of them was a Super Cup, which, you know, it's up for debate whether that's a proper trophy or not. But one cup and one league in 3 years isn't the kind of success that Real Madrid are after. And, you know, if you want a clear indication of whether he's been a success or a failure, I'd say that the fact that he's just been shown the door is a fair indication of the opinion in Madrid.
Do you think that he's definitely going to return to Chelsea?
It seems inevitable, doesn't it? I mean, you've even got Frank Lampard speaking in the English media about looking forward to joining up with Mourinho again. So I fully expect him to turn up there. I mean, well-placed sources, journalists who tend to be fairly informed about these things have all said that Mourinho is going to Chelsea and it's a done deal. So I'd be shocked if he went anywhere else.
Do you think this will always hang over him, that he's not really conquered Spanish football?
I certainly think it will kind of niggle at the back of his head, because he said when he took over at Madrid that it was the one gap on his CV, it was the one place he wanted to manage, and I'm sure with the ego he's got, his dream was to turn up at Madrid, win the fabled Décima, and you know, then sail off into the sunset at that point. Mm. And the fact that he hasn't managed to get that 10th Champions League for them will probably, privately for him, be a bit of a black spot on his career, I'd have thought. Not that that will affect his standing with certain parts of the English press, but that's another story.
Trey, bringing you in, Florentino Perez was questioned about Carlo Ancelotti during that press conference, but he said although they've spoken to PSG, the approach had been rejected by the French club. Do you think that Real Madrid will get the man that they want, or do you think other candidates should be considered?
It's definitely a very tough issue for them right now. It's clear that they want Carlo Ancelotti to replace Jose Mourinho. Looking at the way that Mourinho has gone from club to club, every time he leaves, it seems like the club he left goes into disarray, looking at Inter and Chelsea. So they know they have to get the absolute best person to take over for Mourinho, and it's clear that that's Ancelotti. It's who they want, but PSG have been very clear about how they feel. President Nasser Al-Khelaifi has come out and said there's no way they're letting him go. He has a year left on his contract with the French club, and they see no way that they would ever let him leave early. And there's nothing that Florentino Perez can really do about that. But in the last day or so, it has been reported that PSG are looking at possibly bringing in Rafa Benitez once his spell with Chelsea's over. So I believe if they're looking at other managers such as Benitez, that they are somewhat willing to let Ancelotti leave. I think the pressure from Real Madrid is going to continue to come, and something is eventually going to happen there. I believe in the end, yes, they will get Ancelotti. I think that's who's going to be there, mainly because they really do not have any other options. They could bring back Manuel Pellegrini, but how would that technically work out after his first time there? Other managers out there like Rafa Benitez, I just don't see the club going after him. Germans such as Jurgen Klopp and Joachim Löw, there's just no way they're going to be leaving their current positions for the club. So Ancelotti really seems like the only choice, and I think Florentino Perez is going to stop at nothing to get him. So, yeah, come August, September, I expect to see Ancelotti in the Madrid dugout.
Superb. We'll turn our attention away from the Spanish capital, and to bring the first part of our podcast to a close, we head to Barcelona, where the title celebrations continued with a 2-1 victory against Real Valladolid. Pedro Rodriguez opened the scoring for Barcelona with his 9th goal of the season, before an own goal from former Barca boy Marc Valiente just before half-time doubled the lead. Barca seemed to be going through the motions in the second half, and Valladolid claimed a consolation from the penalty spot right at the end from Victor Pérez. Adam, it's been a carnival atmosphere in Barcelona this last week. 500,000 people lining the streets to celebrate the the La Liga title and more scenes of jubilation inside the Camp Nou on Saturday. A happy week for the club.
An extremely happy week, and I think it shows what the league title means to everybody there. I mean, it's at various points it's been downplayed by all concerned, the fact that Barca have won this league title with things seeming to have been done and dusted so early on in the season. But you know, you can never, you know, underestimate what it takes to win a league. And the fact is that Barca came out of the blocks and won 18 of the first 19 games and were majestic prior to the winter break. And you know, that all seems to have been slightly forgotten with you know, the spectacular dip in form later on in the season. But no, brilliant scenes at the Camp Nou and in Barcelona. I mean, I've been part of those celebrations in years gone by, and they're really great events in the city. You know, it's great to see people, you know, coming out and celebrating the team's success, and it really kind of hammers home what the club means to the people over there. It really is, you know, part of the fabric of the city, if you like.
Was this the trophy that they really wanted this season, given all that's happened off the field?
It's always a trophy that you want. You know, you set out at the beginning of the season wanting to win two trophies. You know, one of them's the league and the other's the Champions League. Obviously, the manner of the exit from the Champions League, and certainly, you know, was it 5 out of the 6 performances in the knockout stages weren't what we wanted. But as I say, you can never sniff at a league title. It took an awful lot of hard work, and you know, we got there despite some, you know, very troubling personal issues for a couple of members of the club, you know, Tito and Eric Abidal. And you know, to say that it's not the trophy Barca wanted, I think, you know, if I were to say that as a fan, I think it would sound ungrateful, and rightly so. You know, I'm always very proud to see Barca, you know, earn the title of Champions of Spain, and it's great to you know, get another notch on the board. And you know, I value this one, you know, as highly as you know, most, if not all, of the others.
Superb. Heath, bringing you in. Whilst they have sort of coasted to the La Liga title, they've fallen short in the Copa del Rey and the Champions League, haven't they?
I think compared to some of the more recent years, then certainly. Obviously, they're always going to be one of the favourites for a run in the Copa del Rey and in the Champions League as well. And I can pick up words that Miroslav Djukic, the Real Valladolid manager, said after the game at the weekend. He said, no, it's not the end of the cycle for Barcelona, because that's what a lot of people have been thinking, that despite how they've run away with the La Liga title this season, a lot of people have said, well, they have fallen short in the Copa del Rey and the big prize of the Champions League. They've had a lot of off-the-field problems, as you've mentioned with Adam. Obviously, Tito Villanova and his battle with cancer. Eric Abidal as well. Also, Jordi Rora. It wasn't the most easiest position for him to be thrust into the spotlight, where he's always been sort of one of the guys, a reliable part of the club, but always in the background. So it was a big, big challenge for him. Especially given that as a key person at the helm of a club, he'd only done it in the lower leagues before going back to Barcelona's coaching staff, and he hadn't done particularly well. So to be all of a sudden thrust into the figurehead position of one of the biggest clubs in the world, that can't have been easy for him. But obviously he was in regular contact with Tito when Tito was back into for treatment in America. So obviously he's had that shoulder to fall on as well. But it hasn't been the easiest of circumstances for Barcelona. So I think if you take those into account, I think they've had an exceptionally good season. Djukic touched on perhaps they lacked a bit of intensity at a certain stage in the season when they came up against the Germans and when they went out in the Copa del Rey. They did have a dip in form. I know when they came to Granada, it wasn't the best Barcelona side that I've seen over the last few years, and Granada really pushed them. But they did enough. They got the magician Messi there to pull a result out of the bag for them. So you know, even when they're not in form, they're still a far superior side to most others. Obviously, the Champions League, that's a level even higher than you're going to come across week in, week out in La Liga or the Copa. So that's another challenge in itself. So I'd agree with what Djukic said in both sentiments. They had a little bit of a dip. That was when they suffered the most and lost the way a little bit in the other competitions, as well as in La Liga. But hey-ho, they had such a huge gap from such a great start to the season that it didn't make any difference in the title race. And certainly, I'd agree with him, it's not the end of the cycle. They've still got a fabulous team. They've still got a fabulous Cantera system with great players coming through and more to come. Some people are saying that, is it a risk keeping with Tito Villanova if he might have a relapse, another relapse? I don't think so. I think they've got enough quality there in the backroom staff that they can pretty much cope with any situation. And if anything, if poor Tito does have another relapse, they've got experience to deal with it. So I think they'll be fine.
Fantastic. Adam, coming back to you. As a fan, you've probably heard it more than ever over the last sort of month and since they went out of the Champions League. But how do you feel? Do you still feel that Barca are as dominant, or do you expect a lot of changes this summer?
Well, they're certainly not as dominant as they were back in, say, 2011 or 2009. But at the same time, it's not the end of the cycle, definitively. You know, even over the past few years, there's always been an evolution of sorts. You know, it's never been exactly the same group of players. There's been the nucleus of Valdés, Puyol, Xavi, Iniesta, Messi. But, you know, others around them have always changed, and new players have come in to try and strengthen or slightly diversify the style of play. And I think that's what we need again this summer. You know, we do need reinforcements. I think this season's highlighted how thin the squad is, and also highlighted that, you know, certain players maybe can't be relied upon as much as in the past. Obviously, Puyol's missing a lot of games nowadays. I don't think Xavi can cope with the number of games that were demanded of him this season. You look in the Champions League knockout rounds and he just looked flat out on his feet a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. He didn't have the same mobility or the reading of the game. And I think there was a mental tiredness as much as anything else in his play. So certainly a few players are needed to come in, take the strain, if you like, off the off the guys who have always been the star players over the past few years. But it's more of a crossroads than the end of a cycle, I would say. There's work to be done, but you can't write off this Barca side. I've every confidence that, given the right signings and proper planning, they can come back and be as good as ever.
Quickly before we end part one, we'll touch on Neymar. It's turning into a bit of a Cesc Fabregas transfer story. It's on and off every day. Would you like to see him at Barca?
I'm not entirely convinced by him, if I'm honest. And it does seem to smack of Robinho, if I'm perfectly honest. You know, he's much hyped in Brazil. You know, great things are expected of him, but whenever I've seen him play, you know, he's kind of flattered to deceive a little bit. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of talent there, but with the price that Santos and the various people with you know, finger in the pie are demanding, I'd probably prefer to see us bring in someone like Sergio Aguero, who's you know, proven his worth in Europe and has proven that he can play alongside Messi. But I think the Neymar transfer will happen, and you know, if and when he does arrive, then you know, best of luck to him, and you know, we'll all get behind him and hopefully have a very successful career at Barca.
Fantastic. Well, that concludes part one. When we come back in part two, we'll take a look at the games that took place on Saturday. Welcome back to part two, and now we'll take a look at the games that took place on Saturday in La Liga. We'll start with Getafe, who lost 1-0 at home to Champions League chasing Valencia. A goal on the stroke of half-time from French fullback Jeremy Mathieu, enough to seal the points. Trey, we'll bring you in. Valencia, do you think that they are the strongest contenders for fourth place now?
Looking at their squad as opposed to Real Sociedad, it's hard to argue against Valencia at this point. The only thing separating the two is goal difference in their head-to-head, and but Valencia just carry a stronger squad that I think over the next 2 weeks will be more successful, and I think that's a lot of what it's going to come down to. Valencia play against Granada this weekend, and on the last weekend they'll finish up their campaign against Sevilla. I think both of those games are matches that Valencia should win and will win. I think they'll take 6 points to end out the season. Whereas Real Sociedad has arguably a tougher last two games. They'll be playing against Real Madrid this weekend. One that they actually could come away victors as is all the drama around Jose Mourinho and the other things happening at Real Madrid. I think Sociedad have a much better chance than they normally would against Los Blancos. And then they end their campaign against Deportivo, who at this point don't look like they can beat anybody. So I think it really is up in the air. It's going to come down to this weekend, I believe. If Real Sociedad can take down Real Madrid, I do think they'll come out victors. But if I had to put my money on someone, Valencia, they have the experience. They've played in big games. They have big stars who know the weight of Champions League. They know how important these games are. Sociedad haven't been there. And arguably none of the players on their squad know what it's like to fight for a Champions League spot. They've been doing it all season, but this is something that I just don't think they're as prepared for as the Valencia players. Ernesto Valverde has done great with Valencia, fixing them up well. All the problems they were having earlier on in the season, they're a well-oiled machine going into the final 2 weeks. And I think Valencia will be in the Champions League next year, and Sociedad will be happy to be in the Europa League. They can't really argue with that at this point. It's not really the season they thought they would have. So yeah, Valencia, I see them getting first, just barely.
Superb. Keeping up the pace in the battle for fourth, Real Sociedad had to come from behind after Ivan Rakitic gave Sevilla an early lead. But he then put one into the back of his own net to level the scoring before Imanol Agirretxe bagged what would prove to be the winner with less than half an hour played, securing a 2-1 win. Heath, bringing you in on this, it seems like it has been more of a struggle for Real Sociedad in the last couple of weeks, and they've dropped some points in recent weeks as well, haven't they? Do you think they've got enough left to continue pushing Valencia?
Well, as you know, over the last few weeks, I've really fancied them just to keep the noses ahead of Valencia. But now we're a little bit more knowledgeable about what's been going on behind the scenes, with obviously the manager's on his way. That's not going to help. That's not going to help things behind the scenes. You know, with the team fighting for a really, really good opportunity to play in the Champions League. So obviously we can perhaps appreciate that's perhaps been playing a part in things as well. Looking at the last couple of games that they've got, as Trey said, they've probably got the toughest two remaining fixtures. Valencia's two games are completely winnable. Loathe the sound to say it for the next match, obviously. But for Real Sociedad, playing Real Madrid, although it's a home match, they'll be relying on the good home record. They'll need 3 points. And I think unless they get 3 points against Real Madrid this weekend, that's the Champions League chase over, effectively. They've got an equally tough match, although a team that's struggling at the other end of the table, as Trey said again, against Deportivo. Deportivo, you know, they're still going to be fighting for their lives. And going to the Razor on the final day of the season, if you're trying to fight for a Champions League place whilst they're trying to fight for survival in La Liga, that's going to be one hell of a game. And if that's not the televised game or the main commentary game on the final day of the season, I don't know what deserves to be, because that's a humdinger of a game for two completely different reasons. So Real Sociedad have got the toughest run of fixtures, obviously knowing what's happening with Montaña now. Even though it's been suspected for a few weeks, a lot of people thought he might stay with Champions League football, or at least European football, in the offing. But it definitely won't help things for the fluidity of the team. So I think, unfortunately, it's probably going to be them slipping by the wayside in favour of Valencia for that fourth place now.
Superb. Finishing off part two, we'll head to Granada, where Heath, you watched your team get a crucial and impressive 3-0 win over Osasuna. Goals coming from El Arabi, Sequeira and Diego Buenanotte. Guide us through this one, mate.
Well, first of all, if any of the other English-speaking journos in Granada are listening, I told you so. before the game, normally we have a porra, which is basically pick the score, and all of them were going for narrow scores or a draw, and I sort of boldly said 3-0. a lot of people were worried about the pressure of the game, and not only the pressure of the game itself, but the pressure from the home fans, which there's been a lot of that at Nueva Los Caminos this season. Obviously, it was a sold-out game. It was a crucial game. They got a fantastic welcome before the match, the team, as they arrived out in the streets. Inside the stadium, the atmosphere was absolutely awesome. But ultimately, they did it. When the chips were down, they got a really good result, a really good performance. And Osasuna didn't really have anything to offer in return. To be fair to Osasuna, they defended quite well throughout the game, but Granada have started doing of late what they've struggled to do all the way through the season, which is create enough chances and to take them. Obviously, one was a penalty, and that makes Sequeira, I believe, the not only Granada's top scorer, but the leading scoring defender in La Liga. So it was another good one for him with his Panenka. And perhaps one of the nicest things to see, as well as the result, was the first goal for Diego Buenanotte, who a lot of people have been hoping he would be in the starting 11. But I think Lucas Alcaraz has been using him really, really well at the moment, which is to bring him off the bench and use him as an impact player. And every time he's come on, he's done just that. He's made an impact. He's either popped in with an assist or he's been in a build-up to a goal. He's been a really key player. Even though it's perhaps not from his preferred ideal of starting games. But I think he's going to be a big, big player for Granada next season. You know, he's going to be a key, whether it's still going to be in the same sort of role as an impact player from the bench or whether it's from the start. I don't know. It depends on Lucas Alcaraz, really. But really, really good performance from Granada. And now for Osasuna after that one, they've got the backs against the wall, because they're looking one of the sides that's now a little bit shaky.
Superb. Adam, bringing you in, we'll look at Osasuna. They seem to do something every year that keeps them in La Liga. They're always sort of in that bottom half, and it looked like they've done enough this season, but the defeat to Granada, it's leaving them with a bit of a shaky end to the season, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah, I mean, I think really for them, it's all going to rest on their home game next week against Sevilla, because they've got to go to the Bernabeu on the last day of the season. Although, you know, who knows what the atmosphere there will be like, given Mourinho's departure. But you know, you look at things objectively, and you know, it really does seem that last home game is the big one for them. I look at things, and you know, the fixtures really are among the sides, you know, the bottom five are more or less of a similar difficulty. And you know, if I had to put my neck on the line, I'd actually say that it would probably be the bottom three at the moment that go down.
Fantastic. Well, that ends part two, a short part, but when we come back, we'll look at all the games that took place on Sunday and Monday night. Three and our roundup of the games that took place on Sunday and Monday night in La Liga. The midday game on Sunday was a lively encounter that ended in a 3-2 victory for Rayo Vallecano over Levante. PT gave the visitors the lead in the first half before Robert Aguafresca levelled the score early in the second half for Levante. Just 4 minutes later, though, Franco Vazquez restored the lead for Rayo, who then went 3-1 up, with PT scoring his second goal of the game from the penalty spot. Vicente Ibora pulled one back right at the end for Levante, but it was too little too late for them. Heath, since they went out of Europe, they're no longer the fairy tale team in La Liga, are they? They've died to the death, haven't they, really?
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head there. I mean, I think one of the biggest problems for Levante was having a sizable enough squad to be able to cope with the pressures of challenging on two fronts. I mean, it would have been great to see the fairy tale continue for Levante in the Europa League, but unfortunately it came to an end on a chilly night in Russia. And since then, I don't think Levante have warmed up, certainly not in the league.
Oh, I like it.
They've been cold as a team. There seems to be all sorts of friction going on amongst the players. I mean, obviously, all this craziness about the Deportivo match, which there's accusations still of players placing bets against themselves. You know, the arguments in the dressing room, accusations by Asteros suing one of his own teammates for defamation of character. It's a fairy tale that's definitely fallen from grace, and they've been plummeting like a stone. I mean, fortunately for them, they'd done well enough in La Liga in the first half of the season that they'd notched up enough points that, you know, this back half of the season and after the Europa League exit hasn't hurt them as much as it could have done. You know, they've just been able to scrape some draws, which has been enough to get them over that sort of magic figure of 42 points that managers always speak of. And if it wasn't for that, you could have seen Levante being in the relegation scrap were it not for that early season form. Yeah. And to be honest, had they been there, were it not for those, you know, a couple of wins and a couple of draws, I would have put a mortgage on them to go down.
Yeah.
But, you know, they've got a lot of sorting out to do in the summer, a hell of a lot of sorting out to do. I still don't think we know if Juan Ignacio Martinez is tied up to the managerial post for next season for Levante. Hopefully he is, because he's been a massive, massive figure at the club, and he's done a fantastic job with very limited resources. So, you know, hopefully for Levante and the fans, they'll turn things around again. But don't be surprised if you're looking in Marca and AS at the start of next season if they're tipped as one of the relegation candidates next season.
Heath, it all sort of started when they let Obafemi Martins leave, didn't it? Do you think they should have done a lot more to try and keep him at the club?
To be honest, no. I mean, if the guy wants to leave, And he's going to do everything in his power to leave. Obviously, he made that clear in the press, which didn't impress people at Levante, and sort of was a final straw, if you like. They couldn't really do much about that. They couldn't really turn back. They couldn't risk forcing a player to stop if there was a clause in his contract that allows him to leave. So their hands were pretty tied, I think, unfortunately for them. But obviously, that's another situation that's never going to help things. And you know, you had different players making different comments at that time as well. You got some of the players backing him, some of the players speaking against him. Yeah. So it doesn't help if you've got a divided dressing room. And that's going to need, during the summer, all the wealth of the experience of Juan Ignacio Martinez to try and sort that out. Hopefully for them they can, but there may be a bit of a clear out. There may be some of these players that have not towed the company line, if you like, seeing the exit door at Levante.
Super. Trey, bringing you in just to touch on Rayo Vallecano. Bit of a shaky run of late, but an important win. Do you think they can get themselves into the European places with two games to go?
If I'm being completely honest, I just don't see it happening. Two games left in the season, and they're trailing Real Betis by 3 points. I don't think they can make up those 3 points with the games they have remaining. As you said, they've been shaky for a while now, relying heavily on PT to score their goals and to keep them in matches. Leo Baptistão has, almost disappeared and struggled with injuries again in his career after having a storybook start to the season. But PT really is their only weapon that they have right now. And they have two tough games remaining against Getafe and Athletic Bilbao, two games that I honestly don't see them being able to win. Either one of them that they could surprise and pull away with 3 points or a draw. But winning both of them is just something that seems outside of the realm of possibility to me. And it's all going to come down to how well Real Betis plays. And their two games remaining are against Levante, who Heath just touched on, have just fallen out of grace ever since their loss in Russia. It's been a terrible season for them. I see Betis going in and taking an easy 3 points, and that in itself should go ahead and seal the fate for Rayo Vallecano. And then a second game for Betis against Zaragoza that they should win. I don't think Betis is going to do Rayo any favors. It's something they don't hold in their own hands. They just have to hope and pray for a Betis to falter in the two coming weeks, and that just doesn't seem likely. Had there been an extra week, maybe three games left, I would probably say Rayo could pull it off, but right now it just doesn't seem likely. And at the same time, there's still a chance, although slim, that Malaga could get their European ban taken off and actually be able to play in Europe next season. That's very highly unlikely, but I think Betis and Rayo are still thinking that, that is something they may have to face in the coming weeks. But for right now, they are fighting for Europe. Betis is going to hold their own future in their hands. Vallecano, they're not going to be able to pull it off. But it's been a great run for them. They need to be proud for the season that they've played. They've done much better than anyone would have thought. PT has come alive this season. Baptistão earlier on came alive, and they've been a very exciting club to watch. Fun players, fun attitudes. Manager's done a pretty great job with them thus far, and they'll have a lot of positives to take into next season. But I think fighting for Europe right now is something that is going to be a losing battle. But next season, who knows? I would peg them to be yet again in the top 10 of the table next season. So it's going to be interesting to watch, especially with the off season.
Superb. Deportivo La Coruña got back to winning ways with a priceless 2-0 victory against Espanyol. After a tight first half, Bruno Gama opened the scoring in the 50th minute. Then Portuguese striker Nelson Oliveira doubled the lead right at the end for Deportivo. Adam, bringing you in, Deportivo climbing out of the bottom three at last. Do you think they've got enough to keep themselves in La Liga?
Just about, probably. it's very difficult to tell with the games remaining and the size of the down there. It's so tight. But I actually see them getting something this weekend against Real Sociedad. On the last weekend against Real Sociedad, and even this weekend when they have to go away to Malaga. Malaga aren't in the best of forms, so I think. They seem to have got a bit of scrap about them at last, and I just think that they'll manage to at least match the points total of Zaragoza over the last two games.
Superb. Heath, just touching on Espanyol, probably a little bit too late now for a European chance, but it's been a fantastic turnaround under Javier Aguirre, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, since he took over, he brought self-belief back into the squad. And from then, they just picked up and kept going and kept going. I mean, first half of the season, where they were sat, it looked as if they were going to be the team going down without a shadow of doubt, because they'd sort of sunk like a lead balloon. But Javier Aguirre's given them wings. He's brought them back up the table to what at first looked like a very unlikely bid for European football. So he's done an exceptional job. The question now is whether he's going to be there next season. And I think he's done certainly enough to earn a longer term contract at Espanyol, and hopefully himself and the club can sit down and tie up a deal for next season, because I think with Javier Aguirre, he's a good old fashioned campaigner. He knows Spanish football through and through. He's managed a number of clubs. He's probably the best candidate that they've got to take the club forward now. And that's what they need to do. Next season, really, Espanyol need to be thinking about pushing for a European place. They're a big enough club. They've got fantastic enough facilities. They've been making all sorts of links with clubs in different countries. They're setting themselves up for good growth in the future. Obviously, they're recovering their own financial circumstances bit by bit. But that's got to be the objective, and I think, to be honest, from what he's done this season, how he's turned them around, Javier Aguirre's got to be the man that they're thinking about to take the club forward long term. Hopefully so, anyway.
Well, there's going to be a lot of vacancies, isn't there, in the summer? Do you think he's going to gain interest from elsewhere?
I think we've talked before about mentioning him for. Once things start to fly around in the air in the summer at Malaga and at other clubs as well. But I think, to be honest, if he's offered the opportunity to stay, if he's offered the right terms, I don't see why he shouldn't stay at Espanyol. It's a sizable enough club to give him the challenge that he wants. And as I say, he's done well enough this season that he can think about building a project of his own there at Espanyol. So hopefully Espanyol do enough to keep him there, because I can't see any bigger challenges for him, not in La Liga anyway, that could perhaps tempt him away from Espanyol. I mean, personally, much as alike, our neighbours Malaga down on the coast, if I was Javier Aguirre, even if they were offering a bigger salary, it's not particularly a job that I would fancy with so many uncertainties, as Pellegrini's found out and obviously been unhappy with. So I would perhaps stick with what I know and stay with Espanyol, because that's a growing project. That's something that he can have a really, really strong input in. So I'd stay put at Espanyol if I was Aguirre.
Fantastic. We're staying in the relegation battle. Real Zaragoza lost 2-1 at home to Athletic Club Bilbao. Helder Postiga giving Zaragoza an early lead, and it looked like it was going to be enough, but Fernando Llorente equalised with 10 minutes to go, and then the home fans were silenced when Ibai Gomez scored the winner for the visitors deep into injury time. Trey, bringing you back in, Athletic Bilbao seem to have been getting better and better, haven't they, towards the end of the season?
They've definitely improved a lot. Marcelo Bielsa has gotten the club back together. The players look a lot sharper, a lot more determined. I think that has a bit to do with the battle, but he seemed to be able to take back command of the club. With those 3 points against Zaragoza, they are no longer in the relegation battle. They've been cleared of it and now sit 12th on the table with the possibility of finishing 10th if some other clubs can do them a favor. The beginning of the season definitely was not what they wanted. And even going back to the transfer window with the pitch bust-ups with Marcelo Bielsa, the Fernando Llorente saga, the Amorebieta saga, which he's now on the way to Fulham, and then the sale of Harvey Martinez. It was just an ugly situation walking into at the beginning of the season. And personally, I'm glad to see them turn things around. As you know, as our readers probably know about me already, being a Catalan and Basque, I love seeing Bilbao be able to turn these things around, because they, along with Barcelona and Real Madrid, the only clubs to never been relegated, it would have been a serious gut check for the entire Basque nation there in Spain. They were really fighting for more than just a club. They were fighting for their identity.
Yeah.
In the last couple of weeks.
Superb. Heath, just bringing you back in to touch on Zaragoza. Slipped into the bottom three now. It's been an awful 2013 for them. Do you think they'll get back out of it this time, or are they going down?
No, I don't think there's going to be any Sisi Puedi. Yes, we can this year. It's looking more and more like no, we can't. Manolo Jimenez has been treading water for a long time.
Yeah.
And whereas a lot of clubs have changed managers, certainly just after the during or just after the January transfer window, Real Zaragoza stuck with Jimenez. First indication was that was belief that he could do the same thing as last season, whilst the other reports were that Real Zaragoza couldn't afford to sack him. The latter seems to be the more likely. But after the game against... against Athletic Club, he really threw his teddy. He said, "This is a defeat that's totally unjust." You can perhaps see from his perspective, he didn't have the rub of the green with the injuries and forced substitutions for Montañez and Victor Rodriguez. That sort of threw a spanner in the works. For the team shape, certainly laterally, and Athletic Club took full advantage of it. So yeah, perhaps a slice of unluck, bad luck for him, but he seems to have lost the plot a little bit, and I don't think he's got the motivation in him to sort of steer the team to safety. And when you look at the final games that they've got. Away at Betis, Betis obviously challenging for European football. I just cannot see Zaragoza getting any points away there. And final day of the season, at home to Atletico. Okay, Atletico won't have anything to play for, really. But, you know, after it sort of fell apart against Athletic Club Bilbao last weekend, I just can't see him getting any points against Atletico Madrid. So, for me... it's definitely no, we can't. Not yes, we can. Unfortunately for them.
Superb. Trey, just coming back to you, just to touch on Marcelo Bielsa's future, really at Athletic Bilbao. Do you think he'll be there next season?
No. To be completely honest, I don't see any way that happens. With the beginning of this season, going all the way back again to the bust up. On the training ground, there's just too much bad blood there, I think, between himself and the top guys at Bilbao. The club needs to go in a different direction. I think Bielsa kind of overstayed his welcome. The players aren't responding to him the way they did just last season when they were knocking off clubs like Manchester United. They need a change, and I think Bielsa even knows that his time's coming to an end. He's come out the last month and even stated who he thinks would be the perfect successor to him, which to me shows that he knows he's on the way out, that he realizes that he needs to depart the club. And the club has been looking at managers such as Ernesto Valverde, which I think would be a great addition. I think he could bring the club back to the European zones where they should be competing. But I think he's going to end up staying at Valencia, meaning the club would have to go with the man that Bielsa said should succeed him, which is Athletic Bilbao B coach Cuco Ziganda. He is Basque. He knows the youth. He's really the perfect man for the job. They are going through a youth movement now with Emerick Laporte. Muñain's still growing. Iba Gomez. Romario even coming up. But they have so much talent at young ages that I think allowing Ziganda to take over will help those players grow and turn into the Basque players that Bilbao have been so famous for. So I don't see Bielsa staying, but I see his departure actually being a good move for the club, to be honest.
Fantastic. Well, the final game of the weekend was the Monday night encounter between Mallorca side destined for relegation and Real Betis, who were looking to keep amongst the Europa League places. A goal from Tomer Hemed in the 20th minute was enough to secure a 1-0 victory for Mallorca and keep their slim hopes of survival alive. Heath, two games left, but even with this surprise victory, really, it's too late, isn't it, for Mallorca?
Well, there's 6 points to play for in the 3-point Evo. The fat lady's not quite singing yet, but she's certainly limbering up with vigour. I think it's definitely been too much too late. It's incredible to think at the start of the season, the first five games this season, there were five games unbeaten, and they were up in the top five. Then they just went on that disastrous run, which sort of saw the protracted exit of Caparrós, and they've just not recovered from that. They picked up a couple of good results, you know, notably, unfortunately, at my place against Granada with the last minute from Hemed again. And that sort of gave them a bit of morale, but they didn't capitalise on that. So, you know, unfortunately, it is for them too little too late.
Superb. Adam, bringing you in just to touch on Real Betis. After the impressive season they've had, do you think they can still finish with European football?
I think they've got a chance. I mean, I went over to Boston to see them play at Camp Nou, and of course they took the lead in that game. And actually, for spells they were very impressive before they, you know, eventually succumbed thanks to Messi coming on. I'd certainly give them a decent chance of overhauling Malaga, and wouldn't surprise me to see them just get that last UEFA Cup spot.
Fantastic. Do you think they deserve it?
I think the most deserving side is the one that's up there after the 38 games. They tend to play an adventurous brand of football. They've got a fanatical home support, and they tend to do especially well at home. And actually, they're one of the few clubs in La Liga who really give it a fantastic go against both Barca and Real Madrid. So they've got a bit of spirit there. And, despite their, underhand ball boy tactics, they're a decent club, and, they would deserve it if they got there.
Fantastic. Well, with just two games left to go, both in the battle for European places and the fight to avoid relegation at the other end of La Liga, we're all set for an exciting penultimate weekend to come, with all the matches scheduled to kick off at the same time. As always, we'll be right there following all the action and bringing you all the build-up and news ahead of the games, as well as the analysis afterwards at www.insidespanishfootball.com. A massive thank you to my three guests on the show tonight. First, we'll start with Trey. Trey, if anyone wants to give you a follow or fire some questions at you, where can they go, mate?
Just at Trey Atkinson. Very, very simple.
Fantastic.
Always there.
Superb. Thanks for coming on, mate.
Thanks for having me.
Adam, same with you, buddy. If anyone wants to talk to you about Barca or anything, where can they go?
My Twitter handle's at Adam Coule, so AdamCoule.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for coming on. Cheers, Adam. And moving on to Heath, where can people go if they want to follow you, mate?
At my own Twitter account, which is at HeathISF, or alternatively via the English language Twitter account for Granada Club de Football. If you just put it on the search bar, that's probably the easiest way to find us. Just search for Granada CF. And also from time to time, I'm sat at the helm with yourself and with Tom on the at Inside La Liga Twitter account. And we had some good fun answering some questions last night. Hopefully we'll do that a bit more often. We don't mind throwing our hats in a ring, so send us as many tough questions as you want to. We'll fire them all to Ben.
Superb, mate. Thanks for coming on, and thank you to all our listeners for listening. We'll see you next week. Cheers.